Hello, hello, beautiful people. I'm Amy Harry, and with me is my co-host, Sotoyin Odubemi. You are listening to Rivers of Unicorns, the hub for tech enthusiasts. We are a virtual accelerator that supports innovative ideas and startups in underserved communities, setting them on a path to exponential growth. We are supported by the K. Wood Brown Foundation and powered by NetOps. Our discussion topic for today is finding fortune with the bottom of the pyramid, the social entrepreneurial mindset. Joining us in this discussion are two special guests, so be sure to stay tuned for that. But first off, let's give you our news highlights for today. On the international scene, tech billionaire Elon Musk had a live demonstration of his new Neuralink tech using pigs with surgically implanted brain monitoring devices. In our local news, Union Systems launches Nigeria's first multi-bank trade finance portal, Optimus. Optimus enables corporates to initiate, process, and manage all international trade transactions across their banks from a single portal. And from our cohorts, two new hubs have been added as cohort spaces for Rivers of Unicorns. There will be listening sessions for the program at these venues every Friday. They are House of Bull at number 20 Biriabi Street, Phase 1, beside Salvation Ministries, New GRA, and City Tech Hub at number 3 Bernard Street, River State Library. Finally, She in Tech will be hosting its first virtual pitch night today at 5 p.m. So for those that are interested in attending, visit the website to register. That's www.sheintech.com/virtual-event. That's it for our news updates. So, I hope you all are having a splendid day. As I mentioned earlier, our discussion topic for today is finding fortune with the bottom of the pyramid, the social entrepreneurial mindset. To join the conversation, you can visit our website, www.riversofunicorns.com. I'll take that again. That's www.riversofunicorns.com and through our Facebook page, Rivers of Unicorns. During this segment, we are joined by Abi Oladunjoye, who is a social entrepreneur with extensive knowledge on sand production within the oil and gas industry. We also have here Lorena Rodriguez, a social entrepreneur from Mexico City who has spent the last 5 years working as part of the founding team at SoulPact, a California-based technology company that developed a platform to measure the social and environmental impact of any organization. You know, it's such a pleasure to have you both here. The last time we were together was shortly after our graduation from business school in San Francisco. So, welcome, ladies.
Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Now, let's jump right in. The emergence of unicorns like Facebook, Uber, and Airbnb in the tech bubble of San Francisco motivated individuals to create tech businesses. But for a place like River State in the Niger Delta of Nigeria that has benefited economically from its thriving oil industry in one hand, whilst suffering from the negative side effects in the other, such as environmental pollution, we are yet to experience the full force of the tech boom. From all the indications of the impact created by these tech unicorns, it is apparent that there is still a different and more sustainable way in which we can do businesses. So, what is the bottom of the pyramid, and what does it really mean to create fortune with the bottom of the pyramid? Lorena, I'll start with you.
So, the bottom of the pyramid means
or refers to people living below the international poverty line, which is $2 per day. And in the case of Nigeria, according to the World Bank, almost half of the population is currently living at the bottom of the pyramid, which shouldn't be the case. This, as you were saying, there are many resources in Nigeria, and it's Africa's biggest economy. And there's a community to support local economy, which right now it's mostly focused on the informal sector. So ideally, we should try to bring social businesses or businesses in general to the formal sector. And maybe I'll give it to Abby to respond to the second part.
Thanks for having me again. So based on my knowledge, bottom of the pyramid refers to the poorest two-thirds of the economic human population. So imagine like a triangle, right at the top, these are the elites, the mega 1% of the rich people, and right at the bottom, that's the bottom of the pyramid. And according to studies and research, you know, these people are so poor that they live barely on $2.50 a day. And there are about 2.7 billion of them in the whole world, which is massive. But as a social entrepreneur, you can create a fortune with the bottom of the pyramid by helping them, you know, creating sustainable ideas, producing and distributing products or services that would help them, like I said, in such a sustainable way, but yet making profits and putting into consideration the environment and basically making profits while helping the poor.
Right. Thank you to you both. So now there are a lot of people who call themselves social entrepreneurs. Can you kind of elaborate the difference for us between regular entrepreneurship and then social entrepreneurship and nonprofit? I'll start with you, Abby.
Okay. So entrepreneurship is what everybody knows, you know, that it really was running a business, adopting any risk that would, any risk that comes with it just for you to make profits. On the other hand, a social entrepreneurship person or social entrepreneur, is an approach where individuals or a group or say startup starts a business, same like an entrepreneur, but you have a social cause. You want to improve the environment. You want to help the world. You want to save lives. You want to do this, but yet you're making profits. While on the other hand, a nonprofit is a business entity as well, but they are not there to make profits. They're usually tax exempt, but they have a duty to report whatever they do to their shareholders or directors or, I guess, the community. But the main difference is an entrepreneur and the social entrepreneurs, you can make profits, but the nonprofit doesn't make profits. And like I said, they're usually tax exempted as well because they don't make profits. And usually the money they get, they put it back into the operation of the, like, running of the business again.
Fabulous. And Lorena, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would just highlight that nonprofits usually depend on donations or grants to subsist. So again, going back to entrepreneurs and social entrepreneurs, they do have profits. And also something important about entrepreneurs is that they need to have innovative ideas to maximize their businesses. In the case of normal entrepreneurs, it's mostly for the profits, like Abby was saying. But in both cases, you need to use innovation and harness technology to maximize your results.
Thank you. So with the emergence of COVID globally, businesses have had to either adapt to technology or just shut down. We've seen that everywhere. For aspiring entrepreneurs, how would having a social entrepreneurial mindset be a benefit to them, given that people are just thinking about how to make money? Lorena, you can start.
Yeah, so as we just mentioned, being entrepreneurial means being innovative, finding different ways of doing things. And with COVID-19, what happened was that, especially, for example, Amy, you were talking about River State, the government shut down airports, close surrounding land borders, shut down major markets and minor markets to protect the population. So this created a shortage in many things, for example, food. And this is where the entrepreneurial mindset has to come in to think of alternative ways of doing things. For example, in this case, any entrepreneurial farmer could have taken the opportunity to use technology to set up, let's say, a system for contactless produce delivery, or to fulfill any other service that was affected because of the closure of borders and other communication channels.
Okay, nice. And Abby, what do you think is the benefit?
So as a social entrepreneur, if we're talking about River State, Port Harcourt in particular, based on my research, I realized that there's like a huge waste management problem over there. And during this corona period, everyone drinks water. Whether they shut down the airport or they shut down this or whatever, people still drink water. And now people even still drink pure water, sachet water. Sachet water is that water we have in a bag. And like I said, based on my research, I realized that over 70 billion or something sachet waters are produced monthly in River State, mainly Port Harcourt, you know, and that's a huge market for social entrepreneur, you know, in the sense that you can partner with the state government, recycle this thing and this sachet packets. You know, I've read too that you can turn into candle product. It can be used for candle products. So there's an opportunity there for you to help the community. You're raising awareness on their health, their environment, you know, you're creating jobs, you're giving them literally a better life, and you're also making a profit for your institution as well. And you're also helping the government, you know, you're helping them, you're making their work easier by raising awareness as well. So that's like, for example, my own opinion, that's a good opportunity for social entrepreneur to come out and make themselves aware.
Fantastic. So what some of the things you've said is really innovation. Both of you have really talked about innovation and then turning that to the community, the benefit of the community. And that's what social entrepreneurship really looks like. Now, when we think ahead post-COVID, what sort of impact do you believe will be possible in the region, in River State, if we have more entrepreneurs take up that challenge to start thinking about their business in terms of social entrepreneurship? I'll start with you, Lorena.
Yeah, so I would talk also from the perspective of the business or the line of business where I am, which is impact management. We constantly talk to many organizations, and we have seen that big companies, development organizations, government agencies are eager to find the most impactful and innovative social enterprises around the world. And especially many organizations want to put resources in Africa to give them the economic resources, the support they need to grow, which obviously reflects back on the economic growth of the community.
Happy?
Okay, quickly, if social entrepreneurs were to take up this challenge and partner with the state government, I believe they won't just make profits, which would be good for their own business, but they'll boost the economy and provide jobs, raise health awareness. The environment is going to be so much cleaner, you know, because people just litter this pure water or sachet water on the streets. That way they're obviously helping the community.
Okay.
So, Lorena, I'm going to start with you. How about you tell us how your company's platform works in measuring the social impact of an organization? What does that look like?
Yeah. So, our platform has different frameworks integrated to measure social and environmental impact. These frameworks go from theory of change, which is the most commonly used in many organizations around the world. It has also some standard metrics like IRIS Plus and metrics from the World Bank, from UNICEF, etc., to select any social and environmental, even financial metrics from them, from these catalogs. And then once you have selected your metrics and created your initial framework, you have to collect some data from the people you are serving. So the idea is after that to create some surveys or get the data maybe from other systems, for example, in the case of financial institutions supporting communities with business loans or with microfinance services, they already have some of the information about the stakeholders in their loan system, where we can analyze if these are underserved populations, if they are serving mostly women, and all of these things that are also attached to their impact. So we go through that process of analyzing where the data to fit these metrics is coming from, creating surveys if necessary. And then once we have the data, we're able to analyze the results and see changes over time, or for example, how the outcome changes from before they have the intervention by the organization and after. So it's like the full cycle from planning your impact strategy all the way to viewing the results in a dashboard and then sharing them through impact reports with funders, donors, and any other person who can support the organization.
Okay. And what is the benefit of being able to do this? Like, how have you seen that impact the companies that you currently have as customers?
Yeah, so one benefit, which is very clear to some of the organizations, is they are able to report on that impact. And that's very important for funders, investors, people who are supporting them, because then they can see that it's worth sending them money, it's worth, you know, supporting the cause, it's worth volunteering for them, because they're actually achieving the impact that they are supposed to achieve. So that's one benefit. And also they are able to understand better if they are achieving the outcomes, and if not, they can get some feedback from their beneficiaries, understand why, and improve their activities, their programs, or their products. Because at the end, these organizations are interested in putting out a product or a service that's going to solve an issue for the community. So they can learn from that feedback and then improve further to get more impact.
Okay, that's interesting. So like, let's take a hypothetical situation, like the example Abby gave, where she said in River State, they produce so much pure water that it generates the plastic packets that they use for the water generates waste. So let's say we have a founder that decides that is what they want to focus on, to be able to take those plastics and maybe recycle them into maybe different plastic bags. Or what else do people do with plastic?
Candle products.
Okay, candles. So they can make candles out of it. I even know that some people even do, I had seen a video where they did interlocking blocks with a compost of different types of plastics melted together. So let's say they want to do something fancy or crazy like that. What would it look like if they are using your platform to measure? What sort of data would they need to collect and all of that?
Yeah, just a quick fun fact. Since you're talking about these different products that you can do from plastic, in Mexico, there's a group of entrepreneurs who are building houses in rural areas, very poor areas, with the bottles, the water bottles, plastic bottles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'll need to check that out.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But so in that case, you would have to find the both the social and environmental metrics. So obviously what you want to do is focus on reducing waste, and also that's going to bring health benefits for the community. Maybe you can also focus on what kind of product you're going to build, if that product can also solve another need for the community. Let's say if it's you're building a house with it. So it's also helping reduce homelessness, let's say. So you just have to really create your strategy or your theory of change and defining exactly where are going to be those focus areas. And once you have that, you start collecting data it's important first to also make sure that the community really needs that kind of solution, because sometimes we just assume that they need something, but there's also a survey to check if that's really the need in the community and if that is going to also displace any other benefit. For example, if the community is currently picking up that plastic and doing something else with it, and you're going to come and you're going to do that, it's going to displace other people's businesses or activities, right? So you have to be aware of all of that. And once you have the clear needs and you have the clear scope of your project, then, you obviously have to come up with your partners, and sometimes you also need some support from the government, because that's the thing with entrepreneurship, that for it to succeed, you need to have a network of organizations and people willing to give the resources and the support this kind of solution. So in that case, the next step would be start measuring first the baseline, which is what's happening before you start your intervention. So you focus your survey in the current economic situation, the current situation with waste, how bad it is, how much is it, how many health issues is it causing, and then midway to the intervention, you take the same survey to the community. You try to go exactly to the same households. That way, you're following up with exactly the same people, and you can see really the change, the improvement. And most organizations tend to, after that, just keep collecting data every year just to see how things are improving. And like I was saying, learning if there are any changes needed, anything that also some unintended impacts, because again, sometimes we're trying to do something good, but then we don't realize that we might affect other areas. So we have to also account for those negative impacts and manage them. So that would be kind of the process.
Interesting. Thank you very much, Lorena. So Abby, on to you. You had mentioned the idea of recycling the pure water sachets, our dear beloved pure water that we always drink. And then what came to mind as well is that we also have the issues with our drainage, where whenever it rains, the place becomes flooded. So what would it look like? Okay, and then even before we even go into the drainage, we also have the issues with the waterways being polluted, because you have oil spillage, definitely lots of bottles and maybe old clothes inside there, along with the seaweed and all of that. So what would it look like if in this, our hypothetical situation, we have an entrepreneur that comes up and decides that they want to take the water issue to fix the waste where it is concerned, from the pure water sachets to the drainage to the waterways? What would that look like?
Okay, so for a social entrepreneur, for the drainage that you mentioned, first of all, I think what is a fantastic opportunity for a social entrepreneur, they need to clear and clean, you know, the drainage, extract every single thing, maybe clothes or plastics or whatever, and take out the things that can be recycled. And obviously the drainage is getting cleaned. Then also there can be like a filtration. It's going to be like in the form of a cycle. So the water keeps getting recycled, and the clean one is obviously stored or filtered somewhere, and the rest that is not needed goes back into the ocean. And in that situation, obviously, like I said, you've cleared the drainage and all the plastics and everything. Back to what you said about the pure water or the sachet water. So like I said earlier, the plastics can be recycled into candle products. Plastics can be used to do different things. We just need to know what grades can be used for what and what not. So now, for example, as we're cleaning the drainage as well, we realize there's seaweed, or there's going back to the ocean, there might be seaweed. Those seaweed too can be also be used and recycled and made into bags. This is something we've done in projects before that can be recycled and made into fancy bags. Then the issue of water pollution, that also can, like for example, where I live here in Texas, we have portable water stations located all around. And this is something I've thought about that can be copied in Nigeria. And it's very, very cheap, even cheaper than the bottled water that we buy. All you just need to do is take your Seaway bottle, the really big one, go in there and just, and the water is clean. I see people there every time. There's always a long queue. This is something we can copy in Nigeria and River States, to be precise. And people will have confidence that, they're drinking good water. The air pollution, the water pollution, the drainage, everything is reduced. And you're even creating jobs for people. There'll be someone there going to make sure everything is working well, everything is cleaned. So there's so many opportunities for these things to happen in River States.
Thank you.
Okay. As you know, this program is called Rivers of Unicorn, and a unicorn is a startup that is valued at $1 billion or more. So here's a fun question for both of you. When you think of the unicorns that exist and their value, either their core principles or their value proposition to their customers, if you were a unicorn, which one would you be and why? Abby, we'll start with you.
All right. So if I was to be a unicorn, I would choose Duolingo because they help teach people different languages and to be better people. So, yes.
Thank you. And Lorena?
Yeah, so I would be 23andMe because I find it fascinating that they are able to use today's technology to trace a person's heritage. And I think that's very important for identity. And also, they have some cool features to keep you like a list of diseases or health issues that you are most susceptible to. Based on your genetics. So I think that is a good way to use, the kind of genetic technology that we have nowadays.
Awesome. I like those unicorns you both mentioned. Based on the conversation we just had with our panelists, here's a quick recap for anyone listening. Having a social entrepreneurial mindset as you either work on your current business or try to innovate a new one has two benefits: building personal wealth and community empowerment. Well, that's all the time we have for this enlightening discussion today. So Toya, the floor is yours to tell us the book you are recommending for us today.
My book recommendation for today is The Innovators: How a Group of Hackers, Geniuses, and Geeks Created the Digital Revolution. And it's written by Walter Isaacson. Have any of you ladies read this book?
No, I haven't.
No.
Sounds very interesting.
Well, I can just tell you why I'm recommending it. So the book tells the story, the history really, of how the digital age came to being, which is really insightful for anyone who's looking to create disruptive innovations. We all know that we exist on the digital now, okay? So thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Lovely having you, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Amy.